Americans' mental health data is up for sale, and it's pretty easy to get. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino. Digital tools like virtual therapy and meditation apps have made mental health care more accessible. But they've also made data about the people using them more accessible, too. That's what Joanne Kim, an undergraduate student at Duke University, found in a report published earlier this year. She identified 11 firms willing to sell her highly sensitive health data. We spoke with Justin Sherman, a senior fellow at Duke School of Public Policy, who helped oversee the study. He told us how this data ends up on the market.
Most of us, right, we might, you know, use a website or an app to make an appointment with a therapist or to go to an urgent clinic if, you know, we have a sore throat, for example. The reality, unfortunately, is that a lot of that health data is not protected. So HIPAA, which people refer to as the U.S. health privacy law, it's almost 30 years old, and a lot of these technologies that are around today were not in existence back then or were not as prevalent back then. And so what happens is that there are some entities covered by HIPAA, like an emergency room, right? If you go in with something, they can't tweet it out. They can't go sell it on the street corner. But there are plenty of apps, of data brokers, of social media companies, of ad tech firms who are not covered. And so you might use an app or a company thinking that your health data is safe, when in reality, they can turn around and completely legally sell that data on the open market.
Tell me about the types of data that were available through these data brokers.
There is a huge amount of health-related information available for sale. Some companies were offering what we'd call aggregated data. So there wouldn't be names or emails or anything in the data set, but it might be a zip code and a number, a zip code and a number, all the way to data that these companies offered that was linked to people. Sometimes that was by name. And so that spanned everything from people with depression and anxiety and OCD and bipolar disorder to even people who had suffered strokes, along with other information like race and ethnicity in children in the home. That is really disturbing, but also sort of builds out that surveillance profile on that particular person.
Right. So what do we know about who is buying this data and how they're using it?
Data brokers broadly form a multi-billion dollar market in the U.S. There's a huge appetite across all kinds of companies for buying this kind of data. Sometimes that's doing market research. Sometimes that's to run ads or to profile consumers. In the health data space, there's been some reporting about health insurance companies buying this information. There was a great ProPublica story a few years ago about companies buying up Americans' health conditions, including data on race and education level. And so this raises all kinds of questions about what these companies are doing with that data. Most of us do have no reasonable expectation that when we use an app or a website that's a health app or website, that they're going to sell the data. You just assume that they're protected under health privacy law. Again, that gap and that misconception, these companies exploit that in order to sell to insurance firms and others who want this information.
What shocked you the most about what you all found in this research?
Two things. One is the cost of the data. The reality is it's not that expensive. You can spend a few hundred dollars to get lists of names with thousands of people in it. The other thing that I found interesting and disturbing is the lack of vetting from many of these brokers. You know, some brokers would ask a couple initial questions, but wouldn't do a background check. They wouldn't necessarily make you hop on the phone to explain what was happening. There was even one broker who said, well, this is really sensitive, right? Mental health data is really sensitive. We need to take a pause. We need to look into you further, but then continue to send data samples anyway.
I'm struck, you know, that there has been all of this talk within the, you know, U.S. government over the last definitely week and months and years about concerns over TikTok and data privacy and national security, while something like this is, you know, completely legal and potentially, I think, very disturbing to a lot of users. I mean, what do you make of that kind of disconnect?
It's a huge disconnect. And a lot of policymakers will say things like, if we ban TikTok, then we've protected our data from the Chinese government. And the reality is that that is a laughably false statement. There is so much information available for acquisition, for scraping, and for purchase via data brokers out there on Americans. GPS data, political data, health data, data on veterans, data on children and students and government employees. When we talk about how do we better protect Americans' data and how do we protect Americans' data from a national security perspective, we can't overlook these companies who make millions and billions of dollars off of, you know, selling people's data on the open market.
So what can be done about this?
This is the hard question. If you are a consumer who's concerned about this, there are some little steps you could potentially take. For example, in California, under the state privacy laws, you can contact some data brokers to tell them to stop selling your data. The unfortunate part is that those laws are narrow, and that for a consumer, that's a huge burden, because not only would you have to sit there and fill out all these forms, you also have to know who these companies are in the first place. And if you don't know your data is even being sold by somebody, how would you even know to contact them? So, you know, the reality is that we really need more regulatory action here. Part of this is driven by the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC. They sued a data broker, Cachava, in August of last year. This is still ongoing, for selling people's identifiable location data on the open market. They just went after GoodRx, the prescription services company with millions of American users who was sharing people's health conditions with Facebook and Google and other companies. And so there is space there for someone like the FTC to step in. But at the end of the day, if you want to make these underlying practices illegal, if you want to say both parties, Democrats and Republicans, agreed almost 30 years ago that Americans need their health data privacy protected, the real long-term answer is to pass new legislation that updates those protections for the digital age.
Justin Sherman at Duke School of Public Policy. We've got the link to the full Duke report by Joanne Kim at our website, marketplacetech.org. She's not able to do press on this herself right now due to her employment situation, according to Justin Sherman, but he did want to stress this was her work. We've also got more information about HIPAA in the online era. Last fall, Marketplace looked into the issue of what HIPAA does and does not protect when it comes to health apps. Spoiler, not much. And Justin mentioned in our conversation a ProPublica investigation about health insurance companies using personal data on buyers to adjust their rates. And it's not just actual health data we're talking about here, but things like race, marital status, what you order online, even how much time you spend watching TV. These could all potentially inform insurer decisions. And finally, there was an action from the Federal Trade Commission on a related matter. In early March, the FTC reached a proposed settlement with the online therapy service BetterHelp over its sharing of user data with third parties. The FTC proposed the company pay $7.8 million to users for what it deems misleading assurances that their data would remain private and that it be barred from sharing consumer data for advertising. The company has not admitted wrongdoing and says its practices are, quote, industry standard. Rosie Hughes produced this episode. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.